WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Formal charges expected as soon as today in what police are calling a targeted terror attack in Colorado.
This is Alex Stone in Boulder, Colorado, where the FBI is investigating Sunday's attack on marchers in a pro-Israel event as an act of terrorism. 8 victims were burned, allegedly by 45-year-old Mohammed Suleiman, who's accused of yelling "Free Palestine" as he unleashed fire on the victims through a makeshift flamethrower and Molotov cocktails. He is now under arrest.
8 people were hurt. 2 have been transferred to a burn unit. More than 30 people were killed, 170 wounded when shots were fired at an aid distribution center in Gaza. Russian and Ukrainian delegations are set to meet at Istanbul today, a day after Ukraine launched a large surprise drone attack on 4 Russian military bases. Smoke from over 170 wildfires burning across Canada still sweeping down into portions of the upper Midwest. Air quality considered unhealthy in parts of Minnesota and the Dakotas. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Major Margaret Houlihan, also known as actress Loretta Swit, has passed away. Swift played the character, also known as Hot Lips, for the entire 11-year run of MASH. According to Deadline, she was nominated for an Emmy Award every year and won twice in 1980 and 1982. Swit passed away at her New York home from natural causes last Friday at the age of 87. Hot Lips and Frank, together again. More troubling news regarding Kevin Costner's too-long-to-say movie title and ridiculously long movie, also known as Horizon, An American Saga, Parts 1 and 2. Good grief. Last week, Costner was accused by a stunt person of sexual harassment, and now the production is being accused of not paying its costume fees. The United Costume Corporation is seeking $350,000 for unpaid fees, according to Variety. Just a word to the wise, to the Yellowstone star, those costumes may come in handy if creditors come knocking. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Brewers and the Reds. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Reds open a 3-game series in Cincinnati tonight. Yesterday, the Brewers with a 5-2 win over the Phillies to complete their first sweep in Philadelphia in 10 years. This despite a shaky start from lefty Jose Quintana, manager Pat Murphy.
Quintana didn't have his best outing, walking 3 guys early. I think they all scored, or 2 of them scored, and then gets hit in the knee, but then responds and gives us 2 good innings. Our bullpen was challenged him in the zone. This is a really good team. You know, best record in the National League.
Pitcher Tyler Alexander designated for assignment. NFL, Packers resuming OTA practices this week in Green Bay. In golf, 25-year-old Maya Stark of Sweden finished 7 under par to win the Women's U.S. Open at Erin Hills in Wisconsin.
It's so cool just looking at all the names on this trophy. And I mean, I love the U.S. Opens, and I'm so happy that it's mine now.
That's Maya Stark with Sports on Mike Clemens.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings, but there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome back comedian singer Rob Paravonian and Milwaukee-based actor Rob Martin, and I talk about our favorite movie gangsters. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
We're going to have more of that smoky haze in the sky today, otherwise partly cloudy, warm and breezy with a high in the low 90s this afternoon. Showers and thundershowers tonight and tomorrow. There could be some locally heavy rain of a half inch or more. High tomorrow in the upper 60s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 49.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
We are not perfect here at Civic Media. Far be it. Certainly not perfect at this show. But one thing I can assure you of, our owner that I can see right through this glass right now, Sage Weil, has never once told me what to say and encourages us to speak the truth. And that's why, above all else, I'm proud to work for this company. And along with my colleagues, we will bring you what's really happening out there. And if we get it wrong along the way, we'll admit to that and correct ourselves as well.
Catch The Todd Albaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll check in with State Senator Calder Royce from the Joint Finance Committee on the state budget and also news headlines with folks at Wisconsin Watch. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
as these new processing plants come online, we're going to have to increase our exports simply to continue to clear that much more product. So hopefully everything goes as planned. We're able to continue moving product, and we don't see price pressures from that. The good news on the producer side for that is that that does have kind of a longer time horizon, right? That's not something we're looking at, you know, in the next month or two. It's going to take a while for all of this to come into the system.
But those states are starting to have an impact.
They are. Yep. So we're starting to see it in cow numbers, right? And that's kind of always going to be your first signal. So once cow numbers start going up in those areas, which correspond to that plant capacity, you're going to start seeing this product come on the market.
Talk to people at the sale barns, and a lot of these replacement heifers and calves that are going out are getting out of semi, and they're heading west from here. They're not staying in Wisconsin or even Minnesota.
Correct, yep. And there was just a big herd sale out west, too, many thousands of head, and they weren't dispersed. They were relocated. And our culling numbers have been down a lot. The graph I have in front of me here is the lowest since 2014, and it might actually be the lowest since before then. So what that means is we're hanging on to animals.
Are we hanging on to them to milk them? Or to breed them to bull calves, to bull beef bulls, and sell those calves, because that's an attractive market.
That's the question, right? Yep, you could take, if she gets pregnant, it doesn't take a whole lot of feed cost to feed a dry cow. That calf, if they can tip the scales at over $1,000, that calf is worth quite a bit.
Leonard Polzin with us again. Leonard is a dairy markets and policy outreach specialist at the University of Wisconsin. You know, we always see, and it's been going on for a long time, that put a few jerseys in your herd to increase components, fats, and proteins. How important is a component issue as we go forward?
Well, I'm a color breed guy, so, I'm going to vote for colored breeds every day of the week.
But I know you grew up with colored cattle.
You know, I think one thing that's interesting is last year, 2024, we were 0.23% lower in milk production, which doesn't sound like a lot. But think about this. We were up in our solids production of about 1.42%. So we were down in milk, we were increased in solids, and we did all of that with about 500,000 fewer cattle. Just for context, our fat percent in 2023 was 4.15 on average for the U.S., and in 2024, it was 4.24. And on our protein for 2023, we were 3.29, and in 2024, we were 3.32. And then every single month, every single year, right, there's seasonality to it, but we just keep pushing that component production higher and higher and higher. The joke is that, pretty soon we won't even need to process yogurt. It'll just come out like that, right? but the big thing here is that, you know, when we take a look at where this new supply needs to come from for this new capacity, we're able to fill that from a solids perspective rather quickly, simply because we are so efficient at producing components.
As we go forward now through the rest of the summer into the fall, do you expect you as an economist, dairy economist, will continue to be surprised by higher milk prices for dairy farmers than we predicted for earlier this year?
Well, that's always the hope. I've been accused of being a dismal economist before, and that the outlook is always maybe more cloudy than sunny. But part of the reason I do that is, you know, I hate for folks to make management decisions around information that may not be reflective at the farm level, right?
Yeah, pie in the sky.
Yeah, I would say right now I was asked to get nailed down on a number yesterday. The averages that I'm looking at seem to be around that $19 mark.
That's better than earlier predicted to start the year.
And it's way better than it could be, all things considered, right? I do realize that on many operations, that's going to be pretty close to their cost of operating. You know, in broad strokes, it's easy to say that, yeah, we're doing well. It's a pretty good year. Income over feed costs looks great. While there's huge spread in operating costs per hundredweight, we see a $10 difference between top to bottom in any given year across dairy farms in Wisconsin in cost of production. So if we can keep exports going, we'll be able to hold on. The other thing I really want people to watch is cold storage. As soon as we start building inventory, that's, I think, going to be our first sign of price pressure. So if you're looking to make a management decision off of one indicator, at least for me and my management decisions, that's what I'm looking at, because that's going to kind of encompass our domestic demand, our international demand, as well as what new processing production looks like.
A market update on the dairy industry with Leonard Polzin, dairy markets and policy outreach specialist with the University of Wisconsin. I'm Bob Bosold.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Dismantling the IRA and other federal clean energy incentives will add a half a gigaton of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. That's according to modeling from Princeton University. House Republicans passed aggressive cuts to clean energy incentives in their latest budget. The Senate is now considering the bill. The Public Service Commission of Wisconsin has given the green light for a major build-out of fossil fuel-burning power plants in Wisconsin. We Energies wants to build new gas plants and operate them for 30 years, largely to meet the needs of Microsoft's new AI data center. It's turtle nesting season, and the DNR is asking drivers to slow down on roads near wet areas, lakes, and rivers. Wisconsin's 11 turtle species lay eggs from late May through June, when you can often see them along roads and in yards. You can help keep them safe by being alert when driving through their habitat. For a deep dive into environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
This is for people who watched me anchoring the news at Channel 13. My last day at TV 13 was 20 years ago yesterday.
Oh, I'm old now too.
Well, yeah, that was my whole point.
And I was too when you stopped working at TV.
That's what I get all the time now is people come up and they go, oh, were you on TV? I'm like, yeah. And then I go, don't say it. I watched you when I was a little kid. I'm like, yikes.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, Dr. Kristen Lyerly on giving pharmacists greater ability to prescribe birth control pills. And we start a new feature wrapping up the weekend in sports.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
There's daytime highs today. And is it statewide or what are you thinking here, Stu?
The hottest will be in the west, western Wisconsin, upper 80s, pushing 90. In the east along the lakeshore, not nearly that warm, maybe even upper 70s. And in between, you know, kind of a real gradient from the real hot in the west to not so hot in the east. But it's going to be a summertime day, just very warm. There's still some air quality alerts all around Minnesota. Red flag warnings in the UP, just because they're not issued in Wisconsin, means we're still going to see that Canadian wildfire smoke. And it's very dry in the north. And a fire could certainly be a much bigger disaster if it were to be started on a day like today. There's a cool front way off to the northwest today. Northwest Minnesota, back towards southwest South Dakota, and there is some rainfall in western North Dakota, back into Montana, up into Canada. Nothing too serious, just some nice showers in that area, but that's the sign of things to come. I expect that frontal boundary will continue to advance east and southeast and start pushing on into Wisconsin. In fact, the chance of rain developing in western and especially northwest Wisconsin later tonight, it develops then through the day tomorrow, first in the northwest, last in the southeast, and that would be even tomorrow later afternoon. Southeast Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and Racine may see most of Tuesday to be a dry day, but then that rain builds in, and the rain will be tapering off and ending by late Tuesday night in the northwest, not until early Wednesday in the southeast. I'd expect rainfall amounts pretty easily almost anywhere in the state, pushing into the half and one-inch range. There may be some stronger weather. And I'd look towards south central Wisconsin, all right, Platteville, Madison, maybe over toward Beloit and up toward Portage, central Wisconsin. Could be some stronger activity there. You know, strong localized heavy rains, strong winds. That could be about the extent. We'll watch that develop. But this system then pushes on through. We dry it out. Temperatures in western Wisconsin, even falling tomorrow afternoon after that cool front passes and we cool it off. Sounds a bit more comfortable for Wednesday. And in fact, the end of the week, temperatures in the 70s, more like normal or what we should be seeing around here. But maybe a hit or miss shower chance holding on to. I'll check the forecast right after this. Mutual
Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong. Rural Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win tickets to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Hey, got yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers, the Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. Two winners will be selected from four geographical divisions, with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
All righty, Stu, let's have some more detail on what we're getting today. Maybe not just today, but it kind of changes fairly rapidly tomorrow, doesn't it?
Yeah, the rain in the picture tomorrow makes a big difference, Pam. Our Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update, mostly sunny and very warm. Lower 80s in the south and east, upper 80s in the west and northwest, and the south winds today around 5 to 15. That rain chance developing in the west and northwest late tonight, more clouds elsewhere. A lot of 60s, low and mid-60s for nighttime lows with the south winds. Tomorrow, then, the clouds move in. That rain extends from northwest to southeast Wisconsin. Like I said, rain amounts easily in a half to one-inch range. Could be some thunderstorms in the south. Temps tomorrow cooling in the west, maybe up into the mid-70s east with the south winds becoming northwest, getting stronger. Rain overnight lasting into early Wednesday in the south, drying out in the northwest. And with some sunshine later on, upper 60s, low 70s Wednesday, Pam, and then 70s toward Thursday and Friday. But a little hit or miss shower could linger here later in the week.
So will we get enough to measure it? Should I alert my rainfall reporters?
Oh, absolutely. Tonight, tomorrow, easily up to an inch in a lot of areas.
That's not good for hay laying down, you know?
No, I know it.
All right, buddy, appreciate it. Stu Mock, our ag meteorologist, with your Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update. Find out more about locations near you at compeer.com.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a portion of a recent episode of the Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie sat down with economist Benga Agyilor, talking about what the impacts will be to rural health care with the current budget bill working its way through Washington.
Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the health care that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
What's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal, is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's going to, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her.
You've been listening to a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, which airs across the Civic Media Radio Network weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the full broadcast lineup at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on Air.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Formal charges expected as soon as today in what police are calling a targeted terror attack in Colorado.
This is Alex Stone in Boulder, Colorado, where the FBI is investigating Sunday's attack on marchers in a pro-Israel event as an act of terrorism. 8 victims were burned, allegedly by 45-year-old Mohammed Suleiman, who's accused of yelling Free Palestine as he unleashed fire on the victims through a makeshift flamethrower and Molotov cocktails. He is now under arrest.
8 people were hurt. 2 have been transferred to a burn unit. More than 30 people were killed, 170 wounded when shots were fired at an aid distribution center in Gaza. Russian and Ukrainian delegations are set to meet at Istanbul today, a day after Ukraine launched a large surprise drone attack on 4 Russian military bases. Smoke from over 170 wildfires burning across Canada still sweeping down into portions of the upper Midwest. Air quality considered unhealthy in parts of Minnesota and the Dakotas. This is ABC News.
It's the Brewers and the Reds. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Reds open a 3-game series in Cincinnati tonight. Yesterday, the Brewers with a 5-2 win over the Phillies to complete their first sweep in Philadelphia in 10 years. This despite a shaky start from lefty Jose Quintana, manager Pat Murphy.
Quintana didn't have his best outing, walking 3 guys early. I think they all scored, or 2 of them scored, and then gets hit in the knee, but then responds and gives us 2 good innings. Our bullpen was challenged him in the zone. This is a really good team. You know, best record in the National League.
Pitcher Tyler Alexander designated for assignment. NFL, Packers resuming OTA practices this week in Green Bay. In golf, 25-year-old Maja Stark of Sweden finished 7 under par to win the Women's U.S. Open at Erin Hills in Wisconsin.
It's so cool just looking at all the names on this trophy. And I mean, I love the U.S. Opens, and I'm so happy that it's mine now.
That's Maja Stark with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, I'll be joined by senior ranking member of the state's Joint Finance Committee, Senator LaTanya Jackson, to talk about the Republicans' cuts that will affect you and yours.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
We're going to have more of that smoky haze in the sky today. Otherwise, partly cloudy, warm and breezy with a high in the low 90s this afternoon. Showers and thundershowers tonight and tomorrow. There could be some locally heavy rain of a half inch or more. High tomorrow in the upper 60s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 48.
Medicare loses about $60 billion annually to fraud, errors, and abuse. June 2nd through the 8th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Learn more by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things. Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a conversation from a recent episode of the Busted Pencils podcast, talking about how AI or artificial intelligence is being utilized in rural classrooms.
I mean, really, I think it was reading so many of these books, like educational, like more theory-based books. It's like we gotta put theory into action. So it was kind of like a happen chance where we stumbled across, you know, Khan Academy with their Khanmigo, like their AI tutor bot. There's a lot more like technology sources, like embedding AI into them. So we started to look at what would be the capabilities of a classroom if we let some of the tier one instruction be turned over to AI. So where students are actually receiving learning. I mean, as adults, if I want to learn how to change a faucet, I go and watch a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Kids, this generation of kids, they want to learn via technology. They want to learn via videos. And so, I mean, I think it was just like this perfect storm of like students being disengaged, you know, I was an instructional coach and associate principal. I've sat through my fair share of lessons that I, as the adult, was bored. So it's like all these problems of practice that we were trying to like find a way to solve. And it's like, well, we have something right in our hands. And so what would it look like if we could turn over some of that tier one instruction to a tutor bot or to personalized learning via an online platform and let the teachers do the depth of knowledge and challenge-based learning and really bringing in those real-world connections.
Tell us, rural Wisconsin. So this is happening then in rural Wisconsin.
It's happening. I mean, we have schools that are, I mean, we started off as like a little pilot and now it's like, I feel like every day it's like, what's going on? Like, what is going on? And in this idea of rethinking or rebuilding like public education, I think each district that we work with kind of faces their own problem of practice. We have a district that couldn't really hire a physics teacher. So how can they take a teacher that has no physics background and use AI to truly help teach the kids? We have districts who are like, you know what? No, we're going to teach math, science, ELA, all the content. We're going to teach that and we're going to reduce that time down so the kids get it all.
You've been listening to a portion of the Busted Pencils podcast. To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to our website, civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North. 910 AM WBZH.
Things like that.
Beaver Dam getting ready to welcome in visitors not just from around the state, but literally around the world, focused in on a flower. Stephanie Hoff's got the details on why you might want to jot down some dates in June to be a part of the audience. And Jefferson County is already home to several different food companies that you might be familiar with. And now another is on its way to the state from Finland. Ben Jarbo's got that update for us on the way. I am Farm Director Pam Yonke. Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Reports on this Monday, second day of June. Let's see. On this day, back in 1953, Queen Elizabeth II is crowned. Happened at London's Westminster Abbey, and it was actually the first televised major international event in history. She went to the throne after her father, King George VI, passed away 16 months earlier. Queen Elizabeth II crowned on this day back in 1953. And on this day, 1847, the first time that this music was used for a wedding, believe it or not. Yeah, it happened on this day in 1847. Felix Mendenhausen's wedding march used at a wedding for the very first time. Dorothy Carew and Tom Daniel, the first to use the iconic piece for their wedding ceremony on this day back in 1847. And happy birthday to actor, comedian, and game show host Wayne Brady, 53 years young today. And now you know. Well, we want you to know, Jefferson County turning into quite the magnet for food producing companies from around the world. Ben Jarbo's got a developing story for us on that.
The food industry is constantly looking for new innovations to be able to better produce for consumers. And a recent advancement of that includes creating egg whites without the chickens. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and Wisconsin native Chris Landowski is a co-founder and chief technical officer for Onego Bio. And now this Finland-based company is coming to Wisconsin. Landowski shares how they made the decision to come to Jefferson, Wisconsin, and why it is the perfect fit.
We did a nationwide survey and looked around for ideal locations to build our factory. And we were looking at a lot of different parameters, or a lot of different things. Where can we find a great place that is kind of supportive of the facilities that we need? So for instance, we are very dependent on corn sugar. So that was one of the large things where we could find a great supply of corn and corn sugar based product, and also the talented workforce that is needed from the biotech side, but also from the food manufacturing side, since Wisconsin, as I know, since I've been a long resident of there, has a very strong history of food manufacturing. So we have all of those talented potential employees available to us in the state of Wisconsin. And also Jefferson is a specific target in that they have put up a food and beverage innovation center where they have a lot of pieces of land that they hope to bring in a lot of food manufacturing companies to do similar things in the food and beverage manufacturing. And that it creates a nice ecosystem there of like-minded companies producing food products. And also the state of Wisconsin has a very attractive, package to recruit companies to set up business there in terms of like tax incentives and whatnot. So it's a very good place for all these matters. And yeah, overall, it just fit in very well into our feeling for how we want to produce our product and also be able to sell that to food companies, which are also in the area. So it's a very strategically good location for Onego.
And you're mentioning that it has the workforce that is needed for this factory. How many people are you looking to employ, or will it take to run this factory?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very large investment, a few hundred million just to build the factory. And that will support, kind of through the factory, maybe some over 1,000 to 2,000 construction jobs during the manufacturing for the building of the factory. And then once the factory is up and running, it's maybe 81 direct full-time manufacturing roles that will be supported from this factory. And of course, there is also other side support for different, like we're buying corn sugar, for instance, that also supports some farmer or other person who supplies us other ingredients that we need to run our factory. So there's quite a big footprint that we'll be putting down there in Jefferson. And this is like the first of several factories that we hope to build in the area.
Landowski also says that due to the versatility of their product, the military actually uses it for their meals. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
On a dairy, decisions are never made in a vacuum. Your products, technologies, protocols, they're all connected. Or at least they should be. Introducing Empower Dairy from Merck Animal Health, the only full solution portfolio in the dairy industry. Empower is more than just powerful identification, monitoring, and biopharma tools. It's about how they work together to eliminate guesswork and solve specific problems. Learn how at m-power-dairy.com.
Here at the Midwest Farm Report, we're always keeping an eye on what's catching your attention. And if you missed anything, don't worry, we've got you covered. Here are the top five stories you listened to this week.
Number five, Feta, Asiago, and Havarti. Common names not accepted by the EU.
At number four, U.S. Dairy furthers partnerships with Indonesia.
Number three, spring weather looks to provide a good start to the growing season.
At number two, a Wisconsin planting update and considerations for the growing season.
And your number one most listened to story, Peony Farm and Festival prepares for thousands of visitors.
Stay tuned for more of the stories that matter to you right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
When hot weather strikes, cattle are stressed. Feed intake decreases and milk production drops. Summer heat may also impact the performance of your herd's reproductive program. Protect your bottom line this summer. Add BioVet's Bovine Gold Light to the TMR and keep your livestock hydrated, milk production up, and breeding program in check. Add Bovine Gold Light to your operation today. Find BioVet online at bio-vet.com. Bio-vet.com.
Well, Beaver Dam is getting ready to welcome guests from around the state. In fact, from around the world. Coming up on June 13th through the 15th, the Wisconsin Arts and Peony Festival is coming back around for their fifth annual event. Michelle Ovens is one of the people getting ready to host. She's got Ovens Peony Farm in Beaver Dam. It's the state's largest fresh-cut peony farm. She cares for about 1,600 peony plants that represent about 100 varieties. And she's been busy this spring, as she explains.
What we've just finished doing was removing all of the side buds. We leave the terminal peony bud on the stem, but all the little side buds, we go through and remove them. That way that the peony stems themselves are considered floral grade. We just finished that up yesterday, as a matter of fact. We also apply a fungicide in the spring when the peonies are first coming up. That is the main problem that peonies have. We have a beautiful crop this year. It's going to be an epic year, and I can't wait to share the beauty with everyone.
Michelle Oven from Oven's Peony Farm in Beaver Dam getting ready to host the fifth annual Wisconsin Arts and Peony Festival coming up June 13th through the 15th. She said they're expecting about 5,000 people, and the economic impact of that foot traffic alone, a big deal for Wisconsin's agritourism industry. Markets and overnight electronic trade would like a little financial shot in the arm. Currently, Dow Jones Industrial Average this morning down more than 100 points. Currently, our July corn is unchanged. December new crop down a penny and a half at 437. July soybeans are down 7.5. November new crop beans down 7.5 at 1019. July wheat, that's currently a nickel stronger at 539 a bushel. Not a lot of action on Friday in the dairy complex. Barrel and block cheese were both unchanged. Double A butter gained 2 cents to finish the week, 247.5 per pound. This morning, the June Class 3 milk that goes into cheese up 2 at 1919. July Class 3 milk up 8 at 1962 a hundredweight. The school year may be drawing to a close, but some schools are going to stay busy this summer investing in agriculture education programs and equipment. Compere Financial is giving 22 middle and high schools some grant monies totaling more than $230,000 across Illinois, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And the schools will use it to invest in agriculture education learning experiences. For example, in Amory, they are going to invest in a livestock scale and a chicken coop. In Holman, they are going to work on supplies for aquaponics, field trips, and a chicken coop. In Dodgeville, they're investing in an aquaculture system. School District of Monroe, animal housing pens. Those are just a few examples of the 22 different agriculture education projects that are getting a little financial shot in the arm, courtesy of Compure Financial. You know, if you've got a dog or a cat, I'm guessing that you spend a little time thinking about what you're going to feed that animal, what brands you want to pick from. Guess what? Farmers do the same. And there is a charity that does work behind the scenes to investigate exactly what feed livestock are looking for and how it's being developed. Stephanie Hoff takes us behind the curtain of the feed industry next on a Monday morning.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Waba.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New York City Mayor Eric Adams had his bribery and corruption charges dropped by the U.S. Department of Justice under questionable circumstances in April. Because of those charges, the New York City Campaign Finance Board denied Adams matching campaign funds. Adams is now suing to get those funds. Mayor Adams was accused last December by the Biden DOJ with taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He was also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal those transactions. We reported in February that the DOJ dropped bribery and corruption charges against Adams after Adams visited Trump at Mar-a-Lago. An apparent Trump directive to drop the charges to the DOJ's Southern District of New York resulted in the resignations of 7 experienced prosecutors. As a result of the corruption charges and paperwork omissions, the New York Campaign Finance Board denied Adams $4 million in matching funds for his campaign from the state's taxpayer-funded campaign finance option. Now that the charges have been dropped, Politico reports that Adams is now suing the board to recover $3.4 million of those denied funds. The Campaign Finance Board will reportedly revisit Adams' eligibility for funding in July. Find our past reports on Adams at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Matt Miller, Milwaukee-based film critic.
The film Sinners, the more distance I have from it, the more I liked it. Is that an Oscar film?
I think there is a love for what Sinners is doing, that a studio movie was this interesting and creative and thoughtful, but also entertaining. This is not the last you will hear about Sinners this year. I'd be shocked if it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, America's credit has been downgraded. What does that mean for Wisconsinites? Hour number 2, we go beyond the cheese. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
And pet food, and what are the farmers or the consumers looking for?
Let's start with big picture. So one, when they're making up rations for all of production animals, we basically are trying to meet the nutrient requirements that are required for the animals. And within that space, there's many different ingredient combinations that we could get to meet that nutritional requirement. In the livestock and poultry and aquaculture space, those ingredients are everything from corn and soybean related to byproducts and other rendered proteins to amino acids and vitamin minerals, right? There's many things that make that up, including all the harvested forages and roughages that we feed. Overall, just to give you a bit of the scale, over 200 million tons of corn-related ingredients go into animal feed every year. That's the largest percent. It's about makes up about 70% of the feed ingredients that go that we feed in this country. The next category would be soybean meal, and that's about 40 million tons. And then it kind of goes down from there. And of course, when we say something like corn-related ingredients, you think of corn immediately, like grain corn. But we actually feed not only grain corn, but distillers' grains, right, as a byproduct productive ethanol. We feed corn gluten and cornmeal and corn oil, all byproducts of the corn processing system. And so there are many ingredients that we feed that are actually byproducts or co-products of other industries' materials.
Because you can use byproducts, it sounds like the feed industry is pretty circular. You're recycling.
So there are a lot of things. Often people think, well, look at all that corn that's going to animal feed. That could be human food. And in fact, when we say corn-related ingredients, because we're thinking about all of those co-products, a big piece of those ingredients that we feed, not only the corn space, but also soy or bakery waste, materials that come from animal processing, all of those things are circular ingredients. And so as a whole, animal feed is about 37% circular. So about 37% of the ingredients that we feed are circular in nature. And of course, that varies when we think about the different animal species. So interestingly, dairy cows are about 50% circular. You would expect that they would have a higher circularity because of the rumen, right? What people don't acknowledge probably is that aquaculture is actually the most circular feed that we feed, and it's about 80% circular, closely followed by horses. And that's purely what that has to do with the ingredients that are going into the feed at the time. And so in the feed space, it's a significant piece of the agricultural economy. The majority of our corn and soy that's actually used in the U.S. does go into animal feeds. And so our being able to track that is really helpful.
When you say circular, it sounds like a sustainability story.
That's exactly right. So one of the reasons we wanted to look at circularity this year was to have a better understanding of the role that the feed industry does play towards reducing the footprint of animal agriculture. There are many different ways that we can do that, but preventing things from going to the landfill, recovering wasted food materials. So people don't think of this, but you know, when you process an almond, you have an almond hull. When they produce orange juice, you end up with orange rind and orange pulp that people don't want to consume. The animal industry consumes that, right? And so we wanted to take a closer look at how those ingredients are used and where all those things come from and where they go into the feed industry. And so our report takes a look at those data sets.
Are there particular additives in feed that are trending right now? Maybe it's an animal health from an animal health standpoint.
An interesting trend in the feed space right now is we know that because of the increased interest in the biofuel space, that we're increasing our crush capacity for soybeans, right? And so one thing that we are seeing in the feed space since our last report 4 years ago is that several of the animal species are increasing the inclusion rate of soybean meal, right? Because if you have more crush capacity to make the soybean oil, then you have more soybean meal that's coming into the space for animal feed. And so we're starting to see this increase in the use of soybean meal.
It's almost like as different industries grow and produce more, the feed industry is right there to be the co-pilot and take some of those co-products, like you said, very circular.
The value that the feed industry brings for using co-products and byproducts as a way to provide nutritious, high quality ingredients for the animal food industry, like we can't surpass that. Like that's the best thing that we can do with those products versus sending them to the landfill.
Laura Moody, along with us, the executive director for the Institute for Feed Education and Research. Again, this is a charity that works on behalf of the feed industry. Laura has the insight on what types of ingredients are in the supply chain today that can meet the nutrition requirements for livestock and pets. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
Tips for passing the farm on to the next generation. Today on Farm to Fork.
The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Like pretty much everything else in the world, there are right ways and wrong ways to plan a farm transition. Mike Downey is an Iowa farmer who works in transition planning for an Illinois company called Uncommon Farms.
In the next 10 or 15 years, it's estimated we're going to see the greatest transfer of farm wealth our country has ever seen. When you look at the amount of wealth currently held by the baby boomers and the silent generation ahead of them.
Downey says pulling off a proper farm transition is not easy.
Only 30% of farms make it to the second generation of those. Only 12% make it to the third, and then 3% to the fourth.
Still, says Downey, it can be done.
Successful farms that transition focus on succession first, then their estate planning or their tax planning. They identify and train their successors early. They determine what is fair and equitable. They 100% commit to communicate. They work with a team of advisors, and they take timeouts.
Downey offered a ton of transition planning info in a recent webinar put on by the American Society of Agricultural Consultants. And there's a link to it on the show info page at NorthShoreProductions.com. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm going to light it up State Street style because I'll be live from Madison. Joining me in studio will be Madison filmmaker Austin Galante and UW Cinematheque programmer Ben Reiser.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Positive psychology coach Kira Sabin. It is great to have you back.
I love the idea of self-help, but there's also something called community help. We have become so divided. We've forgotten that our neighbor is really nice and makes great cookies and probably has the same concerns on a daily basis that you do. I think that we think things have changed, and I think we just have stopped talking to each other.
Catch the Todd Albaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. 8 people hurt, 2 of them in burn units, 1 in critical condition following an attack in Boulder, Colorado. Officials say a 45-year-old man named Mohammed Sabri Solomon shouted "Free Palestine" as police say he threw a makeshift flamethrower at a crowd of people calling for the release of the remaining Israeli hostages. A major attack by Ukraine far into Russian territory.
The operation had been planned for more than a year and a half. Drones were concealed inside makeshift mobile houses with retractable roofs, which were then placed on trucks. The source said those roofs opened remotely and the drones flown out to strike. Russian officials are also investigating two train derailments they say happened after two bridges were blown up in separate Russian regions, this near the border with Ukraine.
ABC's Marcus Moore. Parts of Minnesota and the Dakotas could be in for some hazy days as smoke from more than 100 Canadian wildfires moves south. People are being told to keep their windows closed. This is ABC News.